Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I drop my kid off at swim practice and deliver an episode for you while I walk around. I'm Brendan Riley. Good morning, listeners. It is June 13th, which is a Wednesday. It's a nice morning, a little on the humid side. A little breezy. I don't know if it's breezy for you right now, but it is certainly feeling breezy for me. I'm afraid through a confluence of absent-mindedness and unpreparedness, I'm using my backup mic today, which is harder to shield from the wind. So if it feels a little breezy, I apologize. I don't have a way to cover it. So this may be an episode to skip if you have, sensitivity to bad sound. Of course, you probably don't listen to this podcast if you have sensitivity to bad sound, because record it while I'm walking around. Anyway, welcome to this show. I hope that your summer has started off nicely. I'm 2 days away from Father's Day, or three or four, something like that. Father's Day is coming up. I also have a birthday coming up this week, so that's fun. Next week I'll report on, I presume I'm going to get some new games. That usually happens. We'll see, maybe not, but I will report to you when I know more. So last night I went to my usual weekly gaming event at Toggle Gaming, which is a game group that meets in Palatine, Illinois, at a place called Dirty Nellies, which is a really fun group. There's usually 50 to 75 people there. You can always find someone willing to play kind of any level of game, and it's my favorite opportunity to play the deeper, meatier games, because those are the ones I'm less able to play with my normal group, which would be my wife and daughter and sometimes my son. So this week the founder of the group, Andrew Kirby Smith, decided he wanted to play Panamax, which is a game he hasn't played in a while, and so we busted that out, and it was my first play. So I thought today would be an opportunity to do a shooting from the hip episode. I'm going to do shooting from the hip, Panamax. So Panamax is a game that came out in 2015, and it made a pretty big splash when it did. There was a hot minute where all the podcasts and all the shows were talking about this new game. That's from publisher Stronghold Games. The designer is Gil Dorey. It's D'Orey, if you're trying to look it up. I looked through the other things he's designed. He's done some of the expansions for City of Spies, and the most recent recognizable game I saw on his list was Viral, which is a game that was recently released by the Dice Tower Essentials line. So that got a lot of interest. But it looked like Dorey did most of the work on this game. He did the graphic design and the art and the game itself. So my guess is, he's also from Brazil, I think. So Stronghold picked up the game for the American market. Maybe he's from Panama. I don't know. I had the impression from looking at stuff that he was from south of America, south of the United States, in the Americas somewhere. So that's kind of where I am. Anyway. Panamax is a game about moving ships through the Panama Canal. The rulebook starts out with a really neat fact that I didn't know, which is when the Panama Canal was built, it shaped the way that ships were built. Ships were suddenly built to be able to go through the locks in the Panama Canal. That there are ships that are bigger that can't go through it. They're called Supermax or something like that. And there's some other name for ships that are smaller than that. But then there are ships called Panamax, ships that are built exactly the size they need to be to go through the Panama Canal. And that's what the game is about. So in the game, you play the director of one of four companies that makes money shipping goods through the Panama Canal. Your goal is to make as much personal money as you can, and you do that in a couple ways. The main way, however, is by buying stock in your company and then the companies belonging to the other players. And then at the end of the game, at the end of each of the 3 rounds, the companies pay dividends if they have the money to do so, and the people who own the stock get to have the dividends. It's a stock game, kind of, but the place where it really excels, or the place where it's really interesting, is that as ships move through the canal, they push each other through. So the way the game works, on your turn, you either take a loading action where you're going to load cargo onto the Panamax ships, or you take a movement action where you're going to move ships through the canal. When you take the movement action, when you're taking, oh, I'll back up. When you're taking the loading action, you're getting contracts from one of 4 shipping zones, 2 on the east side going west, 2 on the west side going east. When you complete a contract by loading all the goods onto ships, then you get money, or you get a little friendship token, a flag of one of the countries, of the country or the zone that you loaded the goods from. And the idea is that you use, the more of those you have, the more benefit you get for doing other things. You have a couple ships that you own, and when your ships go through the canal, you get paid, you get a benefit, and you also get benefit for each time your goods go through the canal. So you have your own colored dice, and the pips on the dice determine how valuable the goods are and how much you get paid for moving them. The movement action, there are 2 kinds of movement. There's waterway movement, which some of the sections of the board have waterway markers, and then there's lock movement, which allows you to move through the locks. The place where the people get really excited, or the interesting nuance of the game, is if there's somebody in the locks already and you move your ships in, and there's not room in the lock for your ship, you push theirs forward. And you actually can move anybody's ships. When you get movement action, not only can you move anybody's ships, you're required to. And that's maybe the most interesting part of the game. Also, at the end of the game, you're obligated to. At the end of the game, if you've lost money, you have to pay the debt back from your own wealth. But then the personal wealth that you have at the end of the game determines. That's the idea of Panamax. Okay. So let's talk about it a little bit. First off, I like this game quite a bit. I can't see myself playing it all that often because, like I said, this isn't the sort of game my wife generally would enjoy. So I don't see myself having a lot of opportunity to play the game. But having played it once now, it definitely would be something where if people are setting up and say, "Hey, you want to play Panamax?" I would say yes for sure. It's really fun. It hits a lot of those buttons that I've talked about in previous episodes of things that I really like about complex games. It's got a lot of different things going on. It's got a lot of different levers to pull in terms of thinking about where you succeed or where you can put your energy to move forward. It challenges you to manage your resources, either your movement resources or your shipping resources, very carefully. It's got a couple other things that really make it stand out. The pushing is something you hear about in every review of this game that I've encountered. Every company, every podcast, every group that I've seen talk about this game, the idea that you put your goods on other people's boats and you're pushing all of the ships through the locks is really interesting because that's a unique mechanism as far as I'm concerned. The idea that there are some sections of the game that are advanced universally. If somebody's there already, you help them by helping yourself. It's just not something you see very often, and it's really fun. There's also a fun physical component to it, where the ships are just cardboard chits, but you're pushing them through the lock. I think it would be worth Stronghold's while to release a new version of this with more physical components. Although the game Container just came out recently, which is about international container shipping, so maybe the shipping game is a little overpopulated or something, I don't know. But I think slightly nicer components would not go awry in this game. Having tiny little ships that you put your dice in would be cool. Or even just making the tokens two layered, so you could have a cutout to put the dice in. Just makes them a little less likely to bump. We had at least one or two situations where somebody bumped a die and it moved, and then we didn't know what face it was on. That sort of thing. I would say this definitely is one of those games that people might call fiddly or crunchy, because there are a lot of little rules that you have to remember. So there's lots of places on the board where there's a symbol. To me, the symbols weren't entirely instinctive, that there were some symbols that meant a particular thing. Once you learned that, that was fine. But there were other symbols that had nuance. In particular, there's a card that lets you do, you know, X number of any kind of movement. Like I said, there was waterway movement and lock movement, and this card let you do either kind of movement. But the icon it used was just the icon for waterway movement. So it was a different color, but that's not ideal. There are also nuances that are a little complicated because, like I said, there's company wealth and then personal wealth. At the end of the game, you win by having the most personal wealth. But your company, you have to keep your company solvent as well. If your company goes bankrupt, then you're going to have to spend your own money to fix it once the game is done. So the aspect of the personal wealth and knowing when you pay out of your personal wealth to buy something and when you pay out of your company wealth to buy something, it's just a little confusing. It's not bad, but so there's a lot of little edge cases like this where, admittedly, three of us, it was our first play, and one person had only played it a couple times, and it had been a long time ago, so it was like it was a new play for us, but we consulted the rulebook an awful lot. I wouldn't say it's any more than any other big crunchy game, though, right? Like, for our first play, I was consulting the rulebook of this easily as often as I did the one for Protospiel, Pulsar 2849, for instance. So the last thing I wanted to mention about the game is the point swing was huge. And I don't know that this means anything particularly in terms of the game's quality, except that if points are sort of a measure of how well you succeed, then a game that has a huge point swing means that you can have some people do really well and some people do very poorly. In that sense, this is an older style Euro game. I think our final point swing, one player ended up with 0 points because we decided you can't go negative. If you could go negative, he would have. And one player ended up with 92 points. I think our scores were 92, 50-something, that was me, 30-something, and 0 because he owed money at the end. That is an incredible point swing for a game, right? And the points is how much of your personal wealth you have left at the end. And I guess for any game that involves a kind of economic engine, the point swing can be that big. You know, if you get your engine going, you can really do well. If you don't, you can't. I'm reminded of every now and again I'll play a game where it has a point tracker, and the point tracker allows you to exceed some number of hundreds, 100 or 200, and the first time you play the game you can't conceive of how you could get that many points. For instance, I know that Gilhova's The Networks, you can get up to a 300-point marker. And that, the first game you play, where you barely break 100 maybe, feels like 300 is outrageous. I know that Pulsar 2849 felt that way when we were looking at it, but toward the end of the game, there were a lot of points on the table, so it didn't seem inconceivable that we might get a lot of points. The last thing I want to mention, I guess this is the second last thing, but there it is. So one of the mechanisms that work in this game is a stock market thing where you can buy stock in other players' companies. Now, I know that's an essential element of the 18XX genre, but it's not something I've played before. So I was interested to see how it worked and sort of explore it a little bit. So the idea, if you haven't seen this before, is that each company that somebody's running has stock certificates that you can buy. And you don't get to, you can't just buy them anytime. There are certain moments in the game where it lets you buy the stock. But you can buy stock in anyone's game, not just in your own. So I could buy stock in your company, you could buy stock in mine. And you do want to diversify a little bit, so if somebody's doing really well, you get a taste of that sweet money. And then after the company pays off its debts, which you have to pay money to store any containers that you're sort of moving during the round that you leave on the board, you have to pay money to store. Then at the end of the game, or the end of the round, if you still have money left, then you pay dividends to all of your shareholders, and the price of your stock goes up because you paid out dividends. At the end of the game, it doesn't matter as an individual player how much money your company has. It's only how much personal wealth you have. But if you bought a lot of stock in your own company and your company pays off dividends, then you get the dividends. Plus, at the end of the game, you sell all your stock. So if you had stock in companies that did well, when you sell the stock, you make some of that money back. It's an interesting aspect to the game, and not something I've played much before. I've never played an 18XX game, so I don't have a lot of insight into whether it works like or not like an 18XX game. But it did add another layer to the game where you're trying to figure out, like, am I better investing money in my own company? Or I see that my company is doing badly, and so I start investing in someone else's company to try to make money from them. One rule we didn't really understand was that at the end of the game, if you have any loans, bailout loans, and that part was not clear to us in the early play. Again, one of those nuanced rules that we had missed. Well, that wraps it up for me today. Hopefully it was a little bit long, but hopefully it was okay. Have you played Panamax? What do you think of it? Pop into our Board Game Geek Guild, number 3269, and let me know what you think. Otherwise, what kind of commercial economic games have you played? What do you think of 18XX games or stock market games? I'm interested to hear, if I like this game, what should I try next in that realm? Okay, thanks for listening. I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.